United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law.
Live stream is now active.
God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Wilson in Tampa. Judge Rosenbaum is in Fort Lauderdale and Judge Hull is in Atlanta. And we have three appeals that are scheduled for oral argument this morning. We appreciate your cooperation, counsel, in scheduling these arguments for this morning. Ms. Tisa is the courtroom deputy and she will serve as the timekeeper. And she will let you know when your time to argue has expired. And she will also provide you a 2-minute warning when your time to argue is about to expire. So it looks like we're ready for the first argument. Counsel, I would advise you that we've read the briefs. And in some instances, we've examined the record. We've reviewed the record. If that will assist you in narrowing your arguments for the limited time that you have available this morning. So we will proceed with the first argument. It's the United States of America versus Francisco Arcila Ramirez. Anna Davidi is here for Ramirez and Randy Hummel is here for the government. And Ms. Davidi, you may begin.
Good morning, judges. My name is Anna Davidi, and I represent the appellate Arcila Ramirez in this matter. First and foremost, I'd like the court to bring the court's attention to what happened in this case. Mr. Arcila pled under statute USC 2339BA1 to providing material support to a terrorist organization. And we agree that the facts that constituted that offense, Mr. Arcila knew that the ELN was a terrorist organization. He pled guilty to that offense. Subsequent to that, the PSI was prepared and a sentencing hearing was conducted. At the sentencing hearing, the defense objected to the enhancement under 3A1.4, which is the terrorist enhancement. Now, I want to take the court slowly into how that is done. Our position is that the lower court misconstrued the application of the enhancement and what was necessary to be found to give Mr. Arcila this enhancement. First and foremost, it's important to note the extraordinary penalty that comes along with this enhancement. Courts have in the past said this enhancement should apply only to our most dangerous terrorists. Because of this, it resembles very closely to our career offender statute here. What happens basically is that a defendant...
Wait, we understand it's a serious, I promise you, we understand how serious this is, makes a material difference. Basically, what the district court did, he conflated erroneously the intent that you have to show for the conviction with the enhancement without recognizing, and I guess because our circuit hadn't said so, that there's a separate intent. Would that be a fair way to summarize what happened?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
He was confused. He said, certainly, you've got an intent. You know it's ELN. The statute requires you know that, it requires you know it's a terrorist activity. And so he just conflated that intent with what the statute, with the guideline says, but other courts have said the guideline requires, defines a federal crime of terrorism as offense that is calculated to influence or affect the government and so forth. And he missed, the district court missed that there's a separate intent. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Okay.
And he made no fact finding anyway to begin with.
He did not.
Of any kind of intent.
He did not, Judge.
Okay. And go ahead.
Well, now, Ms. Davidi, didn't Judge Martinez focus on the fact that Ramirez sold firearms, you know, that they're weapons that are inherently violent. And of course they'll be used by a terrorist organization with a specific intent to influence the government. Why can't the judge reasonably infer that Ramirez's conduct demonstrates a specific intent to influence or affect the conduct of the government just by nature of the fact that he sold firearms that are inherently violent? Of course you're gonna use firearms to influence or affect the conduct of the government. Can't the court reasonably infer specific intent based on those circumstances?
No, sir, we don't believe they can, because what is happening is that the courts have held, most specifically in the current case that we cited in our reply brief, which is U.S. v. Al-Haghi, which is specifically a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And in that case, the court goes to great analysis of what must be proven. It specifically says that the characteristics or the elements of the crime that the defendant pleads to are separate and distinct from the prongs that need to be proven to get this extraordinary enhancement. The facts in this case is simple. Mr. Arcila is approached by a confidential source. The confidential source brings him to a meeting with a broker who among his clients sells guns to the ELN. So we are three steps removed from the ELN. The conversations that the government had, the meetings the government had, nothing indicated that Mr. Arcila's specific intent had anything to do with the ELN organization, the ELN goals, nothing to do with the government at all. And what I did, Judge, is I defined, because there's a lot of confusion, I believe, as to intent and motive. And what I did was I looked at Webster's dictionary, and intent more is what your purpose is. What was his aim? What was his clearly formulated intent? There is no doubt that Mr. Arcila's intent was to sell illegal weapons. The government concedes that he was a broker. He sold to all sorts of bad people. There is nothing at all that specifically indicates that he had any sort of attachment, any sort of interest in the government, nothing at all. And I think that extra step is what makes it so badly applied in this case.
But he knew what the ELN did. He knew that was the purpose of the government. I mean,
absolutely.
Of course, the government. He's admitted he knew they were engaged in terrorist activity.
Absolutely.
It seems to me the problem is we don't have the fact finding here by the district court, one way or the other. I don't know what he would find, but we just don't have a fact finding.
Right. And what, Judge, I think that the court would find if they did a fact finding is that, yes, he knew what the ELN did. And what the courts have said is once you plead to a terrorist charge, you have to admit you know what the terrorists did. I mean, you know they're a bad organization. If not, you wouldn't have that component of the element of the underlying offense. But they have to go one step further and say that it must have some sort of direct correlation with the government. Had there been some sort of statement, some sort of indication that Arcila cared, knew that this was going to affect the government, then the argument would be substantially different.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt, but yes. I mean, I think that he admitted that he knows that ELN does in fact advocate, is a guerrilla organization. Those were his words, I think. And maybe I'm misunderstanding this. I was under the impression that in addition to anti-government type action, ELN also engages in things like drug trafficking. And so that the problem was that in the absence of any fact finding, there's no indication tying him to, like if all ELN did was involve itself in guerrilla action, then I think this would be a much harder case. The problem is ELN also engages in other illegal activity. I don't know if you want to address that.
Yes, ma'am. And you're absolutely correct, Judge. That was my next point I was going to bring up. The ELN, besides their terrorist qualifications or criteria, also involve themselves in drug trafficking. They involve themselves in inner war with the FRAP. They are an organization, for lack of a better word, that's involved in all sorts of activities. They're not like, if I would say maybe ISIS, that their only activity is terrorism, even though the court in Al-Ghazi goes to great length to demonstrate why Mr. Al-Haghi should not receive this enhancement. And I think it's very important that we—
Yeah, but Al-Haghi, all he does was he was helping them post stuff on the media. There were no firearms there. There were no bombs, there was nothing. Al-Haghi, the total conduct was helping other people, media posts, right?
Well, I believe that he is promoting—
Yes or no? If it was all about social media posts, he was helping them on the internet do social media posts, right?
Right, promoting their cause, which is not a good cause, promoting terrorism or promoting ISIS views.
And you had a fact finding in Al-Haghi.
Absolutely, Judge. And specifically, that's what the courts have held. They need to go through several steps. They can't just jump to the conclusion, which is what the lower court did. It jumped to the conclusion that this enhancement applied without taking the steps necessary to determine that the first prong of this enhancement applied specifically to Mr. Arcila Ramirez's actions in this case.
Would you agree that if all ELN did was terrorist activity, that his admission that he knew that ELN was involved in guerrilla warfare and that he sold firearms to ELN would be enough for this enhancement to apply?
I still believe extra fact-finding elements that to be proven to show under the first prong of this enhancement that somehow that affected the government, that he did this in order to intimidate the government to go one step further. I think merely—
What else could it be, though? I mean, what else could it be if he knows for a fact that all an organization does is terrorism and he's supplying them with the actual physical tools to engage in that terrorist activity?
Well, I still think there needs to be some sort of nexus to show that somehow his specific actions influenced or affected the conduct of the government. Keep in mind that this organization specifically, they protect themselves against other guerrilla organizations in this area, which is to say the least very violent. So there needs to be some sort of nexus. And I think we're very far removed on the nexus and anything at all to show intimidation or coercion against the government. None of Mr. Arcila Ramirez's actions indicate he cared, he knew, or he was involved at all in the goals of this organization. And I think that's why you need that nexus.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You've reserved some time for rebuttal, and we're here from Mr. Hummel on behalf of the government.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, members of the court. Randy Hummel, Senior Litigation Counsel on behalf of the United States. I'd like to start with discussing what was happening at the sentencing hearing in this case, because I think it's clear when you look at the record as a whole that the parties and the district court were all on the same page about what is the governing legal framework. That there was no dispute about the rules for applying the enhancement in this case, as was articulated, not only in terms of the arguments that were made orally to the district court, but in the extensive briefing that preceded the actual sentencing hearing. You know, you have a very lengthy set of objections to the PSI that were made by the appellant, and you had a very significant response filed by the government discussing in both those pleadings in depth the application or non-application of the 3A1.4 enhancement.
Mr. Himmel, where do we find the findings of fact by the government? Where do we find those findings of fact in the record that would establish a specific intent to affect the conduct of the government by the sale of these weapons to the terrorist organization?
Your Honor, as I indicated in the brief that we filed on behalf of the government, there was extensive argument back and forth on the enhancement. There was a lengthy discussion about the Second Circuit Awan case, which is very germane to this case and the statements made in that case about when the 3A1.4 enhancement is appropriate and when the criteria for that is met. And the judge only made a ruling as to the overruling the objection that was made by appellant to the application of that enhancement after there was a full discussion of that, after the government pointed out to the court how the defendant's actions or the appellant's actions in this case were on all fours with the analogy made in the Awan case about the hired assassin who could care less politically about the aims and the goals of the organization, but nonetheless, by killing an object of that terrorist organization's ire in the government, helps them to succeed in their goals. And it was only at that point, Judge Wilson, that then the district court said, I'm going to overrule the objection.
Counsel, so that raises the question I was asking your friend about over here. And that is, if ELN only were involved in terrorist activity, I think that would be a very strong argument, because the only thing an assassin does is kill someone, right? I mean, there's no question that by killing the person, that's going to have an effect on the government. But if ELN is involved in other activity for which it would use firearms, which is not great either, but for example, drug trafficking is a separate type of activity, criminal activity, than terrorism. And so doesn't the court have to take another step and find that it was his intent, his specific intent, that the guns be used for the terrorism as opposed to ELN's other activities for which they would use guns?
Judge Rosenbaum, I would respond to that by saying you can't separate out what ELN does with narcotics trafficking with their terrorist aims. Quite frankly, and Government Exhibit 21 talks about this in some detail, it's a Department of State synopsis of what ELN does and was introduced without objection at the sentencing hearing. ELN is a terrorist organization. They are self-funded by drug trafficking. Drug trafficking is part of their modus operandi to continue their aim to overthrow the Colombian government. So to say it's a separate item from what their terrorist aims are, I would have to dispute that. I would say that, in fact, it is completely in keeping with their goals as a terrorist organization, because it allows them to do things like buy the expensive weaponry that they did in this case from the appellant. So it is part and parcel of their aims, their goals, their ability to carry out the terrorist aims that they wish to carry out against the Colombian government.
Mr. Hummel, Mr. Ramirez sells, he's a firearms broker. He sells to organizations other than terrorist organizations. Was that taken into consideration by the district court?
Your Honor, I don't know that there is something I can point to explicitly in the sentencing hearing record on that score.
Yeah, but I heard Ms. DeVita said that during her her initial argument, but was there some evidence of that at the evidentiary hearing, that he's a gun broker, he sells to lots of other organizations as well?
I think there was an argument by Mr. Vitti that was made during the course of the sentencing hearing. I don't know the specific location in the transcript where that may have been said, but it, the fact of the matter is that you had a factual proffer that he agreed to where, you know, he is talking in the factual proffer about the meeting that he has with the ELN broker. And
is that where he says, I know they're a guerrilla organization?
No, that actually, Judge, is said in Government Exhibit 19 and also in the PSI. There's a substantial portion, if you look at the record of this case, a substantial portion of...
But when is the guerrilla statement made that he knows it's a guerrilla group?
That is made in his post-arrest statement to the interviewing FBI agents. I believe it's around page 84 of that transcript.
So let me go back to the fact finding. The problem is here, it sounds like you concede there's a fact finding. So we get to Judge Wilson's, well, can't you infer it from the conduct? At the time of this hearing, we don't have any 11th Circuit law on this enhancement that I could find. Is that correct?
You have the Jayusi case, Judge.
Okay, is that on this? Yeah, okay. Does it test out, does it state the test about how it's got to be calculated, et cetera?
Jayusi talks about the critical principle about how to determine the first requirement, that claim motivation or subjective goals are irrelevant, and what matters is what the activity was calculated to accomplish.
But
you know, earlier in her argument,
do we have a case where it's the underlying crime is the same as this crime? I know we have a case on the enhancement, but do we have a case where the underlying crime is this material support to a known organization who's engaged in known terrorists?
Do you mean Judge Hall, do we have a case where you have an arms trafficker selling to a terrorist organization?
No,
something
I'm
that's
just talking about the same. I'm saying the same crime, the 2339. She started off with it, but the underlying crime is a 2339 DA1 crime.
Correct. There are a lot of decisions throughout the country on the 2339
D.
On the 11th Circuit, Jayusi is
a 2339
B.
Okay, thank you.
B, yes, yes. And in the course
but
of
Manti is not, I guess.
Manti is not, Your Honor. No, okay. No. And as a matter of fact, in the course of the sentencing hearing and the filings by Ms. Davidi on behalf of the appellant, before the sentencing hearing, she was citing to a number of cases where she was trying to say that the defendant had not received the maximum sentence, had not received the terrorism enhancement. And a number of those cases came out of the 11th Circuit. They were 2339B cases. The only difference was they preceded June 2014. And at that point, the maximum sentence under 2339B was 15 years and not 20 years.
Mr. Himmel, it seems like what we're struggling here with is to decide whether the district judge made an inference or merely just assumed that the enhancement applies just because Ramirez provided guns to the ELN. How do we resolve that? How do we resolve that with the time that you have left?
My argument to the court and to you, Judge Wilson, on that score is that there's a well-known and long-standing canon of appellate construction that actually just was talked about last week in the Watkins case, that when you're talking about things like a bench trial, we can infer from the court's explicit factual findings and conclusions other implied factual findings that are consistent with its judgment, although they are unstated. And that's been the rule in this circuit and in other circuits for probably from the existence of the 11th Circuit or for a substantial period of time. Now, what I would say to the court is what the district court was presented with was, first of all, it's beyond dispute, Arcila Ramirez, the appellant, knew he was selling arms that were intended for the ELN. Through his factual proffer, plus the admitted exhibits and recorded conversations, he discussed the sales were for the organization. You have the coded conversations that were conceded at the sentencing hearing by appellant to be coded using things like the three letters to represent the ELN, the B's, and his own interview, which I mentioned to Judge Hall earlier, where he says, of course, they were going to the guerrillas. You know, you're talking about being at the Venezuela border in places like Cucuta, which is on the border between Colombia and Venezuela. Second, you have the ELN, undisputedly, is a violent terrorist organization. And you have the exhibit number 21, where the State Department outlines just exactly what type of organization they are, how they are dedicated to the overthrow. They're a Marxist-Leninist organization dedicated to the overthrow of the Colombian government. And that describes their violent, notorious history, that talks about their attacks on police and their attacks as recently as 2018 during the timeframe in this case, and after in 2019, when they blew up a police academy.
Well, Mr. Himmel, aren't you then making an argument that the court focused on the purpose of the ELN generally rather than Ramirez's intent? That's the key consideration. Look,
Your Honor, let me just address that. The two prongs of this are, was it calculated to influence, affect, or retaliate against the government? And second, was it one of the enumerated crimes? There's no question. I don't think appellant can get up and has not tried to get up and say that the second prong isn't met. The old argument is about the first prong, calculated to influence, affect, or retaliate against the government. Appellant's counsel talked earlier about dictionary definitions. The dictionary definition of calculated simply is undertaken after careful estimation of the likely outcome. And if you look at this case, you go back to the fact that the appellant here isn't selling bread. He isn't hosting a website. He's selling guns. They are implements and instrumentality for one thing, for violence. So when he's selling guns.
With regard to the guns, am I right? It was 45 AK-47s. I mean, he's not just selling guns. He's selling a lot of guns and powerful automatic guns and a lot of magazines too, right?
Correct, Judge Hall. As a matter of fact, he was.
What were the guns?
After he sold the.
How many guns and what were they?
That is in Government Exhibit 22, Judge Hall. I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Was it about 45 guns? But there were six in this particular count. I think four were handguns and two were AK-47s. Is that right?
I believe all six, Judge Rosenbaum, were AK-47s.
Okay.
But I think 45 is probably a ballpark estimate. And then on top of that, you had and it's in pictures, I think it's Government Exhibits 17 and 18 at the sentencing hearing. He moved from selling complete guns and having to use straw purchasers to just going online and buying AR-15 uppers and lowers that could then be assembled in Colombia and using the same modus operandi, smuggling them through the compressors that he cut open and then welded shut. You had a veritable arsenal that you see in those pictures of uppers, lowers, of high capacity AR-15 weapons, high capacity magazines. So, you know, it was not just a couple of guns. It was a large amount of guns.
All right, Mr. Hull, I think we have your argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
And Ms. Davidi, you have reserved some time for rebuttal.
I have, thank you. I believe that the government's argument centers again on the conduct of ELN. As I argued in the first half, the fact that they are a terrorist organization fulfills the elements of the crime that he pled to. The court is obligated through all of the case law and through the application notes and through to make specific findings as it relates to this specific defendant. What was his specific intent? The government would like
but,
you.
But isn't that what an inference that can't be, I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, does the inference, if it's a reasonable inference, that selling these guns was intended to influence the government, does it have to be supported by anything other than what the judge said here? These are guns, they're violent instruments. Of course they're intended to influence the government. Does that need to be supported by additional factual findings?
Absolutely, Judge. Our position is, in order for you to get any sort of enhancements, the court needs to make specific finding as it relates to this defendant. Now, in this specific case, the court did not even go as far as Your Honor has described. It merely says, and we've quoted it in both our briefs, what it basically says is, we know that it's a terrorist organization, and basically says, because it's a terrorist organization, there's a correlation, and therefore there he gets this enhancement. There's absolutely no discussion on the record as to the first prong of this enhancement. There's no discussion as to what this specific defendant did to corroborate, to do anything with the government. They merely, and I bring the court's attention to the fact that they must, under the definition A, establish that it's calculated to influence or affect the conduct of the government. And this has to be done by intimidation, coercion, or retaliation against the government conduct. It's important, Judge, and I think that that's the part of the argument that the court missed and that the government missed in their brief, that there is an and in between. There's a part A and there's a part B. Because he admits that he pled to part B, which is a charge that is specifically enumerated, that doesn't automatically find him guilty of part A. And I don't think the quantity of the drugs can assume that it was calculated to influence the government. Secondly, Judge, I believe that the amount of guns that were found, it's very clear from Mr. Arcila's statement that he sold to several different people, that he sold to not only on this occasion to the ELN, but he also sold to the guerrillas, he sold to drug dealers, he sold to a big group of different individuals. So therefore, the court cannot say ELN, terrorists, get the enhancement. And I don't believe the quantity of the drug, the quantity of the guns, which in this case, I would differ on the fact that there was that large of a quantity of drugs that were going to the ELN. Yes, there were six guns, which were clearly sent to the ELN, but that quantity of 46, or the number that the government has, is not a quantity that was specifically going to the ELN. That's a quantity that he is a broker. And if you read through the transcripts, the government concedes that he's doing this to make money. They come back and say, yes, that's his motive, but they know there is no evidence at all that his actions were in any way consistent to do anything with the government. And I think that these implications, if they were made at all, which I don't believe they were made in the judge's head, because there's no indication of them on the record. The record is completely void, unlike the extensive analysis that are in all of the cases that several courts have done on this same issue. This judge, in a hearing that lasted no more than an hour, hour and a half, and that includes introducing evidence, arguing for 3553s, arguing for a large array of things, including acceptance of responsibility, and then basically says on the record, I don't see the distinction, and he responds, and I think this is very interesting. His last words is, I don't believe that your objection is well-founded. I will overrule your objection. And then he says, I guess it is an objection, so I will overrule your objection, which goes back to the theory that he didn't quite understand the prongs, the analysis, and what he needed to comply with in order to give Mr. Arcila this extraordinary penalty. And based on that, Judge, we ask for one of two things, either for this court to determine that there is not enough evidence in the record that this enhancement applies to Mr. Arcila, and to send it back with instructions not to sentence Mr. Arcila with this specific enhancement, or in the alternative to send it back to have the court reconsider it and to consider the precise and long analysis that needs to be made to determine whether or not Mr. Arcila's Ramirez actions actually fall into being calculated and whether they in any way influence the government, which we believe they did not.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Davidi. And I see that you were appointed by the court to represent Mr. Arcila Ramirez. And the case was well argued on both sides. The court thanks you for your representing Mr. Ramirez.
And thank you very much. And thank you for your time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.